We would go from someone who had spasmodic dysphonia associated with the Parkinson's disease to being able to communicate their wants and needs without the tremors, with good volume. That kind of really got me, it got me fired up. I was really excited. I was like, I want to be able to do that.
Welcome to Foxcast SLP, a podcast for clinicians made by clinicians. It's brought to you by Fox Rehabilitation. Find out more at foxrehab.org.
Welcome to Foxcast SLP. I'm your host, Jimmy McKay. On the program, we are talking with one of my colleagues here at Fox Rehabilitation, Chelsea DiStefano. Chelsea, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Did I say that right? Is DiStefano?
Yes, actually, you're one of the very few people who get it right on the first shot.
Well, it's important to say things right when you're talking to someone who is a speech-language pathologist.
I always like to say that. I go, you know, I can help you with how to pronounce my name as part of my job.
Where are you calling in from? Since Fox Rehabilitation, we have clinicians in 16 states right now and growing. Where are you located?
Right now, I'm in Westchester County for New York, Northern Westchester County. So that's kind of my area. I cover a bunch of different places there.
What we want to be able to help the audience with today is voice disorders and SLPs treating individuals who have voice disorders. We wanted to throw some takeaways at them and see if we can give them some insight and maybe just tell them something they already knew in a different way so they can help the people they're working with a little bit better. Why is this something you're so passionate about?
I got passionate about it when I was in graduate school. One of my professors, the way he just talked about it, and I got to do a rotation with him and follow him around. And the improvements that I saw in people that he was working with were just huge. You know, we would go from someone who had spasmodic dysphonia associated with the Parkinson's disease to being able to communicate their wants and needs without the tremors, with good volume. That kind of really got me, it got me fired up. I was really excited. I was like, I want to be able to do that. Voice disorders has always been a really big interest of mine.
That's great.
Regarding pathology. So
that's great. I love how you put that. Whenever people are passionate about anything, and you know, I'm a physical therapist by trade, but I love to hear it when clinicians of all the cousin disciplines, as I call them, PTOT, SLP, when you get excited about things, and you know, just hearing you how you phrase that makes it really important. You know, someone like me who really bases my livelihood on being able to communicate, not having that, wow, that would be crippling.
Yeah. And that's what I get from a lot of my patients, you know?
All right. So where do we want to go first? Always get an ENT eval before starting. That's tip one. Why would you do that?
Yes. The reason we do that, and this is recommended by ASHA, so the speech pathology governing body, you know, we get all of our evidence-based practice from them. They recommend, before starting, getting an ENT evaluation. And this is crucial because we don't have x-ray vision as speech pathologists. I wish we did. But the reason we do this is because there may be something structurally wrong with the vocal folds or the larynx that we can't see. We can do a great bedside eval and say, oh yeah, it's this, this, and this, but we might be missing something. So we always, always, always recommend getting an instrumental done. So going to the ENT and having a scope. I had one person, actually, this was in grad school. They had spasmodic dysphonia, so lots of tremors and shaking in their voice, low volume. And I was like, you know, why don't we go to the ENT, get an appointment, set it up, do a scope. And they ended up finding cancer.
Wow.
And I never, ever would have been able to diagnose that. I mean, that's one of the reasons why it's huge. And they needed to stop treatment with me and, you know, take care of the cancer first and then come back. So that's a huge, huge thing that we need to really advocate for, is doing the instrumentals, getting that in.
That's a great first step. Where do we want to go next? We're keeping it functional. We love that word in the therapies. We love functional. So why are we keeping it functional with individuals with voice disorders?
Keeping it functional, what I mean by that is when we're working on voice, we tend to try to get them to repeat phrases or words or something like that. Getting them to say phrases that they use on a daily basis, it's much more motivational. Most of my patients have grandchildren or great-grandchildren. So they might say something like, oh, come here, baby. So that might be something to work on so that their grandchild can hear them. Or saying things like, did the mailman come today? Things like that, because I could easily have them say, the unicorn jumped over the rainbow and found the pot of gold. they're never going to say that. So why would they want to practice that?
And if they are, I would like to hang out more with them because it sounds like yeah. they lead an interesting life. But I see
yes,
what you mean.
Yeah, they want that pot of gold. Yeah.
I see what you mean. Instead of having something pre-written or, you know, off of a script,
yes.
you know, build that script off of them and their life.
Yes. And it keeps them involved in therapy too, where it's more client-centered rather than clinician-centered, where you know, we're going in saying, you're going to do this, 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 and this. It's more us getting them involved and saying, what do you like to do? What are some things you say? Who do you talk to throughout the day? You know, and it gets them involved and they really enjoy it because they feel like they're also helping themselves because they're helping create those goals and objectives with us.
Big difference in motivation,
yes,
I bet.
Absolutely.
All right. In your big seven list of working with individuals with voice disorders, we're on number three. You say keep family or caregivers always involved. I love to hear that.
Yes. And I mean, this is pretty important for all disorders, but especially with voice disorders, a lot of times, you know, we have family members who are hard of hearing. So they're going to be great judges of whether or not my patient is improving. You know, so I might say, oh, Susan, can you say this and have Harry hear it? And having them be a judge, because it's all about perception, too. I might be able to hear them really well, but we need the family who's going to be there with them on a daily basis to also be judgment and be like, oh, okay, maybe we'll work on getting you up one more decibel, things like that. And then having caregivers be in on it, too, so they can do the home exercise programs that we're going to leave for the patients to improve generalization and carryover, which is the main goal of all therapies.
Absolutely. Moving on to number four on your list, hygiene is key. And you even put that in bold letters.
I did. When I talk to my non-clinician friends about voice, they always ask me, like, what is that? I talk about hygiene and they go, so you shower the throat? What is that? So hygiene for voice is monitoring your diet, watching spicy foods, milk, actually. It helps with heartburn, but it can actually create more. And that can create voice disorders. Getting enough sleep, getting enough water, brushing your teeth is a huge thing too, because it prevents bacteria from getting down into the larynx and getting into the lungs or the vocal folds. So hygiene is just key. Another form of hygiene too is not abusing or overusing your voice. So I always like to think of teachers. And with the start of the school year, it's an important thing for them to know too. Projection is key and not screaming or being shrill. Using your voice in the right way is going to be a huge help too, because that'll prevent any vocal nodules or polyps from developing too.
Wow, I don't think I knew a lot of those points you just brought up there.
It's definitely something that gets missed often. If you don't have a speech pathologist in there or someone even who just knows about voice, it definitely gets missed.
Up next on the list, number five, no one's the same. We're all individual snowflakes.
Yes, we are. In my point with that, I said, because I'm LSVT certified, which is a very, very rigorous treatment. 4 days a week for an hour. That's a lot for speech. Yeah. And it's set out. It's scheduled. Everything has to be done for a set amount of time. But not everyone can handle that. Voice can actually be very tiring. You're using very small muscles in the throat that you don't even know existed. Modifying therapy to be good enough for everyone and just being aware of what your patient is able to do. You know, be cognizant. Maybe they can't handle the 60 minutes, so you might drop it down to 30 minutes. That wouldn't be LSVT anymore, but it might be what's necessary for that specific person. Maybe they can only do 20 minutes or they can only do 45. You know, you just have to be aware and also tailor the exercises to them too, but still give them a little push so there's progress.
Making sure it's dosed appropriately. I mean, we see this in all the therapies, PT, OT, and SLP, is make sure it's dosed appropriately so you don't wind up making things worse. So that's where the skilled part of therapy comes in, is you being able to recognize those things.
Exactly. And I had one person complain of pain in their voice, and there should never, ever be pain when you're doing voice therapy. And that's where point number one, always get an ENT evaluation before starting, comes into play. They had an ENT evaluation and there was nothing wrong. And then they were experiencing pain. I'm like, you need to go back. And they had a polyp. So they had to take care of that. Yeah. And voice therapy does help with that. But I never would have known.
All right. Up next on the list, number six, EBP. We love that phrase. Where does that come in here?
Evidence-based practice, I mean, it comes into play with pretty much everything that has to do with therapies. But with voice, the biggest one that comes to my mind is LSVT. There is a ton of research to back it for voice therapy. There's a lot of research to back resonant voice therapy. You know, you really want that evidence to back you up. You don't want to just go into a session and be like, oh, we're just going to do this, 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 and this. And then there's no research behind it. You know, because sometimes you get those patients and they Google everything you do. And then they might be like, why are we doing this? I don't see anything about it helping anyone with my specific diagnosis. Evidence-based practice is there for a reason. It's there to guide you in therapy. It's proven to work. So why wouldn't we use it?
Stick to what has been proven. This is science. This is not guesswork. I love that.
Exactly.
Up last on your list, number 7, you're saying go back to the basics.
Yes. Diaphragmatic breathing. Diaphragmatic breathing is when you use your stomach and your diaphragm to really breathe, and it helps stretch the lungs out so you can fill them with enough air so you have adequate breath support for voice. I find a lot of times with my patients, if I say take a deep breath, their stomach goes in and their chest puffs up instead. And that's not really using your lungs to their full capacity. So I have them put their hands on their stomach and I say, okay, we're going to do a full breath and you're going to try and push your hands out when you're breathing in. Then they're able to hold their ahs or ees for much longer and with louder volume just by changing that one little thing. In a lot of sessions, I try to start with maybe 30 seconds of diaphragmatic breathing just to kind of set them and kind of reset their mind. So, you know, everything's kind of, it falls in place like dominoes.
Chelsea's Big 7. We'll call it the Big 7 for working with individuals with voice disorders. We'll review. Always get an ENT eval before starting, keeping it functional and making it about that individual sitting in front of you. Bring in that family, bring in those caregivers and get them involved. Hygiene, that is key. K-E-Y. Number 5, no one's the same when it comes to treatment. So it's going to be varied. EBP, follow that evidence-based practice. And number 7, go back to the basics and bring in that diaphragm. Chelsea, love that list.
Thank you. It's really easy. I love it.
Last part of the show, we bring in your foxtail. Are you ready for that?
Sure.
Why did you decide to work with older adults?
So I think I kind of fell into the geriatric population. I was looking for something new. I was working with pediatrics and I wasn't really feeling fulfilled. You know, the kids, they're adorable, they're cute, they're fun to play with, you can do bubbles. But when I switched over and I was talking to some friends who were in skilled nursing facilities, they were just telling me, they go, you know, it's a lot of fun. You get incredible stories from these populations. So I did it. I applied and then I was like, all right, we'll see how this goes. And within the first month, I was sold. I was like, this is the population for me. The progress I see, the words of encouragement from the family. And they're saying, this is like my mom again. This is the old mom that I used to see and that we knew. That really kind of sends it home for me. Okay, I really am making a difference. I can see it. Other people are seeing it. I feel it. I call it getting the quote unquote paycheck, not getting paid to do it, but getting that paycheck in return, knowing that you made a difference.
Chelsea DiStefano, one of our SLP colleagues from Westchester, New York. Appreciate you giving us this list. I think it'll be definitely helpful for the other SLPs out there, as well as the OTs and PTs, to get some insight into the different things that you do with individuals with voice disorders.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I had a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to Foxcast SLP. It's brought to you by Fox Rehabilitation. Fox clinicians work hard, love their work, and get the respect they deserve. Sound good? Then you'll love the autonomy to work in your own style and the support you get to achieve excellence. Plus, freedom and flexibility to have a personal life. Whether it's your first day or you've been around for a while, your contribution is acknowledged and rewarded. That's what makes Fox a success. Happy, well-trained clinicians make great healthcare. Are you a fit for Fox? Find out now at foxrehab.org.